history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, maybe it's someplace like Orem, Utah, no matter where you are, there are some men and women around you who have incredible stories to tell. And if you take the time to listen to those stories, sometimes you'll be amazed. You'll be educated, entertained, so often inspired like we are when we visit with members of our greatest generation. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And some of the story of this gentleman has been preserved and passed on in a book that I've got linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. It's called Lesser Heroes. The author is 90-year-old Zane Taylor of Orem, Utah, served with the 35th Infantry Division during World War II. On the cover of his book, you'll find a teenage version of Mr. Taylor clutching an M1 rifle. Still have an M1 rifle. Is that the same one, one of the same ones you used in the war?
No, I came on a stretcher to the United States, and so I got a rifle after. I have the overcoat. I have a hand grenade. I have my medals and stuff.
Including the Purple Heart and the Combat Infantry Badge. And we're going to hear about how you earned all those things. But I want to talk first, before we get into the war, about your childhood. Because growing up in Utah, you didn't know there was going to be a World War II. You didn't know you were going to be drafted. But I'm sure you had some ideas of what you thought you were going to do with your life. What do you remember about those days?
Of course, we were in the LDS Church. And so all through the younger years, we were taught that we would go on a mission. And so we grew up going to church and playing out in the countryside. Ephraim, where the Snow Junior College is just full of places like quarries, mountains to climb, shooting the BB gun. And we had more fun than anybody because there were so many places to go, and I had a couple of buddies. We'd ride our bikes to the mountain and climb to the top. And my mother was very, very helpful. She took me to all the lyceums at Snow College, which means that when a piano soloist or any special program came into Snow College, she drug me up there as a boy. I learned to appreciate good music, good people, and Snow College was kind of a special place.
I saw the piano when I walked in. Is that something you play? Or?
No, my mother started me, and then I told her I had earned some money in the summer, and I quit, and I'm sorry. I've been sorry ever since. My wife is an excellent player. She plays in church every Sunday, and she's very good, and she sings like an angel.
Well, and you never would have met her if you didn't come home from World War II, which we're going to get that story. You know, another thing I like to ask every veteran that I have on this show about is a date that everybody seems to have some kind of memory about, December 7th, 1941. Do you remember how you found out that the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor?
Very definitely remember, because Sunday afternoon after church, we went down to a swampy area by Ephraim, and that froze over for miles. And we then got hockey sticks, pucks, and the whole works, and set up hockey game. And we were down there playing hockey when some people drove down out of town to this skating place. And that's when we found out about the Pearl Harbor on December 7th. And it was a shock. But as a boy from 16, 15 on, I always listened to little old radio about the Russian-Finnish war. I kept track as a 16 to 18, how the Russians and Finnish, how they were fighting. And I was loved the little radios we had.
So you knew there was some turmoil in the world, but this still must have been quite a shock to the system that now America was under attack. Did it occur to you that this might be something you were going to be involved in some point?
My friend and I thought nothing was going to happen until we're 18 and we're only 16. And so at that time, we didn't think we'd ever get in a war. But we knew about it, and we read every article in the paper, and it was very interesting to keep track of how we build up our armies, navies, and air corps, put war plants in the next town to us where they made parachutes. Everybody worked like crazy to make this war successful. I call it a team effort by United States.
And that's a great point to make. And, you know, the title of your book is Lesser Heroes, and some of those heroes are the ones we don't think about that were here stateside doing a lot of the jobs that the guys overseas weren't here to do anymore. But you would end up overseas because Uncle Sam decided to draft you. Were you ready for that?
We prepared because we found out that this test was available to go to college.
In the Army Specialized Training Program, ASTP.
It was ASTP. We both passed the test and were happy that we were going to college.
But as so often happens, especially when it comes to World War II, the things you expected weren't the things that happened. Tell me what went wrong, how you got derailed in those plans.
Well, when we went to Georgia, they said all the people who went to college still had to have 13 weeks of basic infantry training, which we thought was great to do, have fun. It was hard work. But when they found out that they needed more infantry, they disclosed the program as for us. We were trained, really trained good in Georgia, because when we got North Carolina, they said, "Oh, you guys have already been trained. You're ready to go overseas." So they took all us guys out of that. We were going to be the 100th Division, and they took us out, shipped us to Maryland, where they make the final touches on us to get us. So we wanted to go overseas and punished us all they could to make us feel like we wanted to go. They were so tough. Running through gas chambers, shooting ranges and everything. We were well prepared to go over.
As a teenager, what were you, 18 when you headed overseas?
They held us up till we just turned 19. There was some word came back from the wars that we were killing 18-year-olds. So a couple of days after I turned 19, I was on my way over. 6 months to get ready. 6 months over there in either the hospital or the war, and then come back 6 months in the hospital on the way back.
And did you know what kind of unit you were going to be in, that you were going to be in a rifle squad, or were you kind of curious who you were going to be with?
Yeah, we didn't find out who we were with until we landed on Omaha Beach, which was secure. It had barrage balloons all around with nets hanging, so the enemy couldn't strafe the whole place.
Yeah, because those balloons were there prevented those air attacks. And this was about a month after the invasion when you guys got there?
2 months after. And then we walked a long ways and got on a train. They took us up to just barely past Paris. And that's where they said, "You're going to join the 35th. It's on the line. They're on line."
So at this point, when you got there, you didn't know where you were going to be. Your replacement troops for somebody who's going to need them.
They didn't tell us where we were going. Or I didn't get the word, because going up that beach, steep hill with a load on, even though it was safe, it was still scary. And we could really visualize what those guys went through. The first day, there were about over 5,000 killed the first day. Yeah, it was scary, and there were ships all over dumping tanks, cars, trucks.
So you find out you're going to this 35th Infantry Division, the Santa Fe Division, and I imagine when you join an outfit like that, there's probably some guys in there who've been through a battle or two. Did you have anyone that was a little older that gave you a little sense of what you're in for?
Yes, my squad, they hauled us as close to the front line as they could in trucks. Then we got out in trucks, and we had to walk probably 2 to 3 miles in the forest. And then they assigned a couple of guys to each squad in the parse, and they just moved along, and the guys were able to. My squad was in the parse and went in there, and they were all old guys. They were really old, and they'd build little teensy tiny fire down the ground. And I go up, and my Sergeant Lee introduced me. They didn't hardly look up, but they had whiskers, and they were old. And shells were coming in at night. They'd land here and there and around about us. And I finally got hold of my Sergeant Lee. I said, "Hey, I'm afraid of those shells. They're going to give me the first night I'm on the front line." He said, "Oh, don't worry about it. They don't know exactly where we are." And he said, "Just go dig a foxhole next to Kerrigan," which is one of those guys. "Well, where's Kerrigan?" "Oh, he's in the village getting some really good food to eat." And he said, "Just dig in with him, move his hole over so there's room for you." And I thought, okay, Kerrigan wasn't there. And I got in, I was so tired of walking and all that, and I went to sleep. Pretty soon I hear somebody hollering. It was Kerrigan who'd come back, and he says, "What's this guy doing in my foxhole?" They'd played a joke on me. They were all over there laughing because I got in with Kerrigan. Nobody slept with Kerrigan, but I did that night.
Yeah, they sure did set you up. And you say that. You told your sergeant, "Hey, I'm scared these shells are going to get me." I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't know if any of us who have never been in combat can really understand the level of fear or concern that you have. Did you think you were going to ever see your family again?
No, I was sure I was going to get hit some way. It took me about 3 weeks before my mind could accept. But the question was, where are you going to get hit? We knew if you got hit in the head, that was sun or that was the end. If you got hit close to the heart, then that was about the end. But you could hope for an arm, a leg, or feet, get something down below, a wound, so you could get off the front line. Well, this group here of my squad, we just survived. We'd get a few new guys about every 2-3 weeks, and they'd disappear because they got wounded or shot or something. So we were pretty fortunate to go 4 months and still have the same guys.
And those guys, including Zane Taylor, are pictured on the front cover of his book, Lesser Heroes. I have that linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. As for the kind of hazards they had to survive, Mr. Taylor will walk us through that when we come back, and we'll also find out why he wears the Purple Heart. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. If you'd like to sell your low-mileage, well-maintained RV in excellent condition, bring it to Paul Everett's RV Country and they'll sell it for you. That's right. Consignments are welcome. Any type of motorhome, travel trailer, or fifth wheel. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's within driving distance of this radio station. Helping RVers get the most out of their RVs is another one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Paul Everett's RV Country in Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. For the exact locations, go to the website. That address is rvcountry.com. That's rvcountry.com. Over 55 years of experience and 1 million RVers served. Paul Everett's RV Country, proud supporters of Hometown Heroes.